From Jefferson Public Radio, I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another JPR Live Session. JPR Live Sessions are recorded with Audix microphones. Audix, when sound matters. My guest today is Kiran Ahluwalia. She has released a number of records, the most recent being 7 Billion, which came out in May of 2018. Information can be found online at kiranmusic.com. Hello, and welcome to JPR.
Hi, Eric. Thank you for having us. It's such a beautiful studio and
thank
space.
You. It is very nice to have you, and it is indeed an us. You have brought a full band. Who is here with you, and what are they going to play?
With me is my musical and life partner, Reza Bassi, and he is on electric guitar and arrangements. And right behind him is Maritu Marquez on drum kit. And beside him is Nitin Mitta on tabla, the Indian percussion
instrument. It's our first set of them in this studio.
Oh.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, nice. And then right beside me here to the left is Sam Barsh on organ keyboard.
Fantastic. It is safe to say that you are a multicultural musician and person.
Yep.
Born in India.
Yep.
Spent time in New Zealand, India, and Toronto.
Yeah.
While growing up.
Toronto, Canada, yep.
So you've seen probably just about everything.
No, not about everything, but definitely I have imbibed a lot from the places that I've been in.
Where did you land as an adult? You're in New York?
Yes, I've been living in New York City for 17 years.
A good place?
Of course.
To call
home
base?
I love it. I love it. Yes.
There is quite a bit that I am going to need to learn from you here today, and probably also some things that listeners are going to learn in terms of the kind of music that you make and the languages that you sing in, and we'll get to that in just a minute. Early on, I read that it was your dad, your father, that was playing a lot of music around the house that kind of got your ears first tuned in to the sounds that we're hearing from you now.
It was actually both my parents, my mom and my dad, and they were both pretty seriously passionate about music. So they had different careers. My mom was a teacher and then an accountant, and my dad was a doctor of microbiology, but they were serious about music. And so they would participate in their college competitions in India. They would compete, you know, in these college competitions in India for music. And they went to see a lot of live music. So I was, and they took me with them. So I would be 5 years old and I would often be the only child at these either Indian classical concerts or ghazal concerts or any kind of Punjabi folk concert. And they took me with them and I inherited that love for music. Insane love for music.
Well, it's been with you now for some time. There is a lot written about, quote, Indian classical music.
Yeah.
And that is not meant to denote the kind of orchestral or chamber music that Western Europe produced for hundreds of years that we play here on our station.
No.
It specifically means what exactly? Indian classical music.
Yeah. So I just want to also say that I'm not singing Indian classical music. That's what I learned. That's my training. But that is not, I'm singing a modern Indian song style. But
fused with other things.
Fused with other things. Yeah. Now, Indian classical music is, it's such a, how can I describe it? So it's vast, a large majority of Indian classical music is improvisation. So the soloist, either the vocalist or the instrumentalist, will start off with a very short composition. You know, the composition might take like a minute to fully play out. And then after that, they're interweaving improvisation and they keep coming back to snippets of the composition on the first beat. So it's a lot of improvisation, and the improvisation happens in Indian scales called ragas. And you don't really go out of the raga, out of the scale. And of course, a raga is more than a scale, and that's a whole big different conversation. But a raga is different from a scale in that there are certain ways that you have to approach certain notes. While you're ascending the scale, you might not be able to take certain notes. While you're descending the scale, you might not be able to take certain notes. So there are a whole bunch of rules to the ragas that make them much more than just a scale.
Gotcha.
It's really hard to describe Indian classical music in a couple of minutes.
Well, the styles that you have incorporated into the music that you create, one of which you mentioned in passing just a few minutes ago, ghazal, I believe you pronounced
ghazal.
It. Ghazal. And Punjabi folk songs. Mm-hmm. I would love to hear something before we talk more about both of those styles in depth. What do you want to play first?
We're going to do something from our latest album. This album is called 7 Billion. And it's about, you know, the 7 billion of us on the planet today and all the... And the way that we're all, you know, our lives are kind of going down the toilet in terms of cultural tolerance. And so the first song off of this this album is Khafa, K-H-A-F-A, and that's what we're going to do. And Khafa means anger. And so this song is about my anger against the middlemen of religion, the guys who make up all the rules. And it's about my anger at institutionalized religion and the way in which it kind of gets in the way of just having a direct, simple relationship communication with whoever your spiritual guide is.
I can't wait to hear it. This is Kiran Ahluwalia, playing live here at JPR.
Thank you.
Kiran Ahluwalia is my guest. That tune comes from the newest record called 7 Billion. Information is online at kiranmusic.com. It is certainly multicultural. There are all kinds of things going on in your music. Thanks for playing that. It's really cool.
Oh, thank you.
It's really cool.
Thanks
here with a five-piece band.
Thanks for having us.
There was a time that, if I understand correctly, that music was not foremost in your mind. You were doing other things. You were working as a trader for a while. Mm-hmm. You were working doing... Well, you had a degree in institutional relations or something like that, corporate relations. What were you doing?
My bachelor's at University of Toronto was in international relations. And then I got a job and I was doing part-time. I was doing music part-time ever since I was a child, ever since before the age of five. And so I did it part-time throughout university, throughout school, and then also throughout my first full-time job. And so I wasn't, like when I got my first job, I felt like I woke up and I was able to see my future very clearly if I was going to continue on the path that I was on. And I thought, okay, well, I'll work hard. I'll climb up the corporate ladder and then I'll buy a home in the suburbs. And I was able to see the color of the carpet very clearly, you know, dusty rose carpet in my suburban home. And being able to see my future so clearly at that time scared me because that wasn't the future that I wanted at that moment. And I also thought of myself when I was 90 on my deathbed and I thought, you know, when I'm dying, what am I going to think about? Am I going to value this life that I had, or is it going to be like, oh, okay, well, that was over. So all of those feelings made me feel like I want to quit my job and I want to do something I really have a passion for, even if it's not forever. I'm happy if I can just do it for 1 year of my life. So I quit my first time job and I went to India to be a full-time music student for the first time in my life as an adult. And I thought it was going to be 1 year, but it really dragged on for 10 years. And so I'd be in India for a year, then I'd come back to Canada or go back to Canada and do something else for a year, then go back to India for a year, then come back. And in that time frame, in Canada, I got an MBA in finance at Dalhousie University.
Have to do something to pass the time, right?
Well, yeah. Something to please the parents. That was something to please the parents.
Well, you had a doctor and a teacher for parents.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And immigrants, you know. And, you know, like it's, you know, they worked hard. My parents were just like a lot of immigrants, very concerned about financial security. And myself, because I was brought up in Canada, I wasn't concerned about financial security. I was concerned with adventure and passion. And that's what I wanted in my life. So anyhow, I had a whole bunch of jobs and then in 2000 and studying. And then in 2000 is when I released my first commercial album.
Wow.
Gushish Attraction. Yeah.
Have you looked back since then?
No, it's been, I mean, the life of a musician, the way I'm doing music, I'm not singing in English. I don't do pop. I can't just go into a small town and play a club for 5 days. So for me, there is a lot of insecurity financially, or even just like, you know, logistically in what's happening a year from now. But I've got to say that I'm happy with what I do.
Well, you can always play here.
Oh, thank
We're
you.
We're happy to have you.
Oh, we love Oregon.
Kiran Ahluwalia is my guest. She's live in the studio today with her full band. The newest record is called 7 Billion. You can find information online at Kiran, K-I-R-A-N, music.com. All right, what's next?
We're going to do a song.
Is that a megaphone that you are holding?
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. Let's see what this is about. What are you going to do?
So we're going to do a song called Hayat, and that is from our album. This is from our album Sanata, Stillness. And Hayat means life, and I call this my immigrant song. And the song is saying that people who speak the same language as me are unevenly distributed in this world, meaning that they're not near me. They're scattered far away from me. And so I'm feeling a little lonely and I'm feeling like I'm a refugee of life itself. And a lot of people think, you know, when I call it my immigrant song, a lot of people think that it's about my experience of being born in India and then immigrating to Canada as a child. But it's really about my experience as an adult immigrating from Toronto, Canada to New York City.
Ah.
Yeah.
That is a bit different, isn't it?
It wasn't smooth. It definitely had a bit of turmoil in it as well.
All right, well, let's hear it. This is Kiran Ahluwalia and her band live here at JPR.
Ah.
That one is called Hayat. It's Kiran Ahluwalia and her band. They're live in our studio today. That one not from the latest. The latest record is called 7 Billion. It's out as of May of 2018, last year. Information at kiranmusic.com. So you have collaborated with a band that was just here not long ago, Tanarawan.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you get connected, or how did you get connected to the sounds and the music of Western Africa?
I heard Tanarawan. I heard half a set of theirs in Toronto. And I thought, okay, this is really cool.
That's what everybody thinks when they hear Tanarawan.
Exactly. And I didn't buy the CD then, but I kept thinking about them. And then that later on, I bought the album, and I couldn't get that sound out of my head. And then I started researching more Tuareg groups and just couldn't get that sound out of my head. And it was a very slow falling in love. Mm. And it has never left my bones since then. So I was in the middle of recording Wanderlust at that moment. And so, which is an all-acoustic album with collaborations and with Portuguese fado musicians. But here I was, you know, with Tanarawan in my head and Tuareg music in my head. So I composed my first composition that was meant for electric guitar, and I put it on that album. Then I went to Copenhagen after a while, and I met the producer of the Tanarawan albums, and Justin Adams, told him that I loved it and that I'd composed based on it and I'm still into it. He wanted to hear the music. I sent him the track. He said, why don't you do something with them? So then that's how Ams Amin Common Ground, the next album, was born. And that was a collaboration with Tanarawan and also with Terracaft, another Tuareg group that I had discovered in my research adventures. And so we were in France for a couple of weeks, and it was just awesome. We recorded that. And then after that, that West African influence has not left me, and I continue to bring it in all the compositions that I do.
There are similarities, I would assume, in order to make them work. They tend to stay in the same key, right?
Yeah.
With like a long extended groove that can be, you know, expanded upon and improvised over.
Yes, yes. They don't. They do stay in the same key, and there are similarities in that we both start with choruses and then verses and then choruses and verses, and there are definitely other similarities. But it's really the differences that I love.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk about the two styles that you do tend to specialize in, one of which I'm going to continue to butcher the pronunciation of, ghazal.
Yeah. I mean, I trained in that.
And what is it?
Okay. So I trained in that. And I'm going to say that my style is more modern Indian song than it is ghazal. I did a lot of ghazals in my first couple of records, but
and
now...
And it is ghazal, as if you're guzzling something to drink.
Guzzling down, down some hot
and
chocolate.
And a ghazal is...
So a ghazal is, it's a poem to begin with. It's always a love poem. And by that, I mean a poem of passion, which means that it can be about carnal love, but a boy or a girl... But it can be about anything. It can be spiritual, about God. It can be about a political cause. It can be about anything that is your passion. And then that passion is written about in the ghazal poetry form. The passion is written about as the beloved. And in this world of ghazal poetry, the beloved is always unattainable. And so you're the lover. One person is the lover and one person is the beloved. And the lover is forever doing insane things, chasing the beloved. And the beloved is always cruel in the fact that he or she never acquiesces the love. So that's the world of the ghazal. Yeah. And so when I was starting to bring in a lot more Western influences like drum kit and electric guitar and jazz influences and West African influences, I felt that the ghazal genre, which is steeped in tradition from 14th century India, I didn't have as much room to bring in all the sounds that I wanted. And so that's when I kind of left ghazal and started writing my own lyrics, just in song format, not in ghazal poetry format, but just in a song format. And so that's when I started writing my own lyrics and melodies as well. Yeah.
So do those then differ from Punjabi folk songs in that they don't have the heat and the passion, or?
Punjabi folk songs have a different kind of a heat. and so the Punjabi folk songs are lighter in their subject matter. When I write my own music, I tend to write about the issues that are bothering me in the world, like cultural intolerance, like fundamentalism. And so when I pick up a traditional Punjabi folk song, or when I write it, I tend to make that a little lighter and talk about like flirty things, like trying to convince a shy lover to be open in his public display of affection. I write about jewelry, you know, trying to get a beloved to buy me a nose ring because, you know, what better place to put a nice rock than on my nose. I tend to think of them as like happier.
Yeah. You mentioned you don't sing in English. Your songs are recorded in which languages? It's a couple of them, yeah?
I write in Urdu, Hindi, and Punjabi. Yeah.
Do they all come fairly easy to you when you're singing? Or is one more comfortable?
In singing and in talking, they're all the same to me.
Really?
Yes, wow. But I do write everything, and they all have different scripts. So Urdu is in the Arabic script, Hindi is in the Devanagari script, and Punjabi is in the Gurmukhi script. Three completely different scripts. Mm. So when I write in the Devanagari script just because that's what I learned the most. I'm just more comfortable in that, yeah.
Due to the shape and sound of the words and phrases, is one of them easier to sing?
No.
No.
Yeah.
Well, what is this next song in?
Okay. This next song is in Urdu, and I didn't write the lyrics. I wrote the melody. The lyrics are written, they were written in 1990 by an Urdu feminist poet by the name of Kishwar Naheed in Pakistan. And the words are, Ye hum gunegar aurtein. That's how it starts out. Ye hum gunegar aurtein. And translated, that means we sinful women. And so it's a song about fighting for gender equality, to right the wrongs, you know, to undo the power dynamic that has existed for so long. And so the words were written in 1990, and unfortunately, you know, they're still true today. And the song is about powerful, strong women being mislabeled sinful, or in this country, being mislabeled nasty or dangerous. And it spoke to me, and so I wanted to make it into a song. This is We Sinful Women.
ये हम गुनहगार औरतें हैं
That is called We Sinful Women. It's a song from the record called 7 Billion of Kiran Ahluwalia. She's my guest in the studio today with her band. Information can be found online at kiranmusic.com. The incredible tabla solo in the middle of that one done by Nitin Mehta. Also on keys in our studio today, Sam Barsh. On drums, Marito Marquez. Reza Bassi playing guitar and providing some background vocals. Kiran Ahluwalia singing through a megaphone, singing through some sort of effects down by your toes.
Yep.
It's been great to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's been great to be here.
Before I let you go, there are two other interesting little footnotes on your life resume, one of which you have spent time working in radio for CBC.
Oh, yeah.
And you have worked at Putumayo World Music,
yes,
which we know quite well.
Yes, yeah. I've worked, yeah. So after I got my MBA in finance, I went to the trading floor at a bank in on Bay Street, which is Canada's Wall Street. And so I was on the trading floor for about 6 months. I didn't like it. It didn't like me. I got pushed out. I walked out. And I traveled and went to Japan and ended up at a record label there auditioning for them. And as I was auditioning for this Japanese record label, I thought, you know, this wonderful Japanese man, he's wonderful, but he doesn't know anything about Indian music. And yet he's, you know, judging me in a good way, but judging me. And I thought, maybe all my knowledge of Indian music can be commercially saleable back in Canada. And so that's when I discovered, you know, I made a list of all the places I could work and I landed up number one on my list, which is CBC Radio in Canada.
Yeah, they're good partners. Yeah, and you were with Global Village.
I started Global Village with Anne McKeegan. And do you get Global Village here?
We don't, I've listened to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for coming, bringing your amazing band. It's great to meet you.
Thank you for having us. You've been lovely and this space is gorgeous.
Thank you. JPR Live sessions are supported by and recorded with Audix microphones. Located in Wilsonville, Oregon, Audix designs, engineers, and manufactures high-performing innovative products that contribute to the advancement of the professional audio industry.